This meeting is now being recorded.
Third in a series of three evening lectures given by Master Kirpal Singh at the University of Santa Clara Mission Church, November 18th, 1972.
Dear brothers and sisters, yesterday, last night, we were talking about God. And we came to the conclusion that nobody has seen God at any time. Which God? God absolute, who was worldless, nameless, that God which did not come to expression. That nobody has seen, nobody can see, that is only just supposing it to him. Of course we can see God when he wanted to be many, there was vibration. And that vibration resulted in two things, light and sound. So that God into expression power is God word. Shabda, Kalma, and so many other names. So that God into expression power, called world, Nam, that is the cause of the creation of all universe. So that has got two aspects. God is light, and God is beauty of the sphere. We can see the God into expression power, the two aspects of which are light and sound. Now the point remains, who can see that God into expression power? Krishna says, thy word is a lamp unto my feet, and light on my path. Guru Nanak says, when you come in contact with Nam, you become luminous, you see the luminosity comparing to thousands of suns together. Mohammedan saint says, God is light, Khuda do. So we can see the two aspects of God, into expression power, not God absolute mind. Now, who can see that God is the creating power of all the universe, is the maker of all universe, is the controlling of all universe, is permeating all universe. So God resides in every heart. Again, to differentiate which God, God into expression. And that was light. And about that light is the sense. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. That light is within each one of us. So the point is, who can see that God into expression power, the light of God, and the music of the sphere, Nada, Kalame Kadi. God resides in every heart, but where he manifests, he's made world, made flesh. Such a person can withdraw the attention, which is the outward expression of the soul, from all outside and from the body below, take it to the seat of the soul at the back of the eyes. There, the single eye opens. There the third eye is open. their shivnets are related to his divti shilokul. With that you can see God, light of God. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now I submit it, who can let us see that light? Christ said, I have come to make those people see who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. One guru also means the same thing, who can remove you. Curtain of darkness from before you and make the light manifest. So such like persons are sent by God from time to time to guide the child humanity. Ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet gone back to our home. We are so much entangled and identified with the meshes of the world that we have forgotten also. So Master come, they make men see the God in His special power. It is said when man was sent out to the world, seals were put on the eyes and the ears, so that they may not see that light within them and they hear that nada, the music of the spheres reverberating in all creation. So God, when He finds His children very unhappy in the misery, He sends such men who open, break those seals from the eyes, they begin to see. Who breaks the seals of the ears, they begin to hear. Before that, the terminology of the saints, they are blind and deaf. When they go to such a person, they begin to see and begin to hear. Christ said, what you see, the old prophets could not see. What you hear, old prophets could not hear. Oh, if you want to see God, you see. Where the world philosophies end, there the religion starts. So, there's required somebody, teacher is required everywhere. Child is born, his parents, brothers are teachers, in school they are teachers. You know, all out of pursuit, somebody is met. Expert in that line is required to guide us, teach us. All these subjects relate to the outer faculties, mind and intellect. And this is such a subject where all philosophies, good philosophies end. When you rise over body consciousness, there the ABC starts. Could you ever dream that such a person is not required to look at it? Who sees that and make a thing? Call by anything you like. So Maharaj said, if you want to pay visit to the place of pilgrimage, it is best you take somebody who has already been to the place of pilgrimage. Who can be that? He says, maybe Hindu, maybe Turk, maybe Arab. There is no question who is he, what label is he carrying. One denomination answers that may be totally. Who has seen, who has been to that place, take him by him. So we need somebody who can help us here. In what way? Our souls are identified. The outer expression of the soul is called attention and attention. Identified with the body and all the faculties and the world outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We cannot differentiate ourselves. All masters said how to come out of the delusions, you know thyself. This is detailed thing was given yesterday and this is told by. And how to know oneself? Generally we see at the level of the feelings, our emotions, our trying influences, they are all subject to error. Seeing is above all. So Master says, first see and then say. In their terminology, they say all are blind. Very sweeping remark, of course. All are deaf. Kabir say, had there been one or two, I could have made them understand. However, see, all are sitting blind. Blind is one. Not that who has got no eyes on the forehead, but is one whose inner eye, third eye, single eye, is not open to see the light of God. Whose inner ears are not open to hear the voice of God. Such a person is called a master, the terminology of the saint. So we need somebody who has seen, make us see. As guys have come to make those see who do not see. In Gita, you see, fourth chapter you will find, if you want to meet God, meet somebody who has seen God, who can make you see God. Guru Nanak was asked, you say God is everywhere. As you see, yes, with what eyes? So those eyes are different. Those eyes are not of the flesh and bone. They are other eyes, other things. Thy says, thine eye be single. The single eye is not the outer eye. That is open when your attention is withdrawn from all outside and collected at the seat of the soul, at the back of the eyes. There are single eye open, deep pupil open, not before. So they come, they say what they say. They say there is God. One God. That detail was given yesterday on to brief it. He's eternal, he's got no ego, he is born of his own self. Then Guru Nanak says, well, why we call him one? That is not one. The question once becomes one, that question will become two. This one stands for some other thing which is beyond this one. Sadhguru Dirayatika, if you meet some master, he will give you what you say. Inner experience of that which is beyond one. The Guru Anjan was asked, why you say one? He says, because we are finite. God is infinite. Because we are finite, we have to use our finite terms to express Him as one. It's either one or two. Kabir also said the same thing. If we say it's one, then the question two arises. The question two arises, there's duality. But it's not all in all. So we want such a one person, name him as it is like, who has the competency first to weigh up, to rise up with body consciousness, open the inner eye, the third eye, or the single eye, to see the light of God. Who can open our inner ears to hear the kirtan of God, music of the spheres. And that music and outer music, they are different things. Mind that. Outer music takes you to the very heart of the matter, not beyond. Inner music starts when you rise above matter. Bhai Gurdas says, this music of the spirit you hear when you rise above physical body, not before. There is a vast difference between the two. This can take you to the very verge of matter, and That will start beyond matter, that takes you to the very source of it, emanating, to the Absolute God. So Master said, look here, we are all lovers, devotees of some higher power called by so many names. Thousands of lovers there are, but the beloved is one for all. God, call him by any name like. We may be belonging to different religions, schools of thought, but ultimately what is our ideal before me, us, to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves first, because it is the soul who can know God. God cannot be seen by the outward faculties, mind or intellect. It is soul alone that can know God. Like knows it. Like. Soul is of the same essence as that of God. Unless we know ourselves by self-analysis, by rising up our body consciousness, we can know God. Strange enough, the man body is the true temple of God. Body works as long as we are in the body. There are so many doors open, out of the eyes, nostril, mouth, ears. We cannot run away out of it. Some power is controlling us. But that controlling power is the God into special power, which controls our ears. So say belong, you may belong anywhere. In any religion, any school of thought, the thought is there, one higher power, what is called by own. Any name. So thousands of lovers are there, but the beloved is one for all. He whom we desire is the beloved of the whole world, and the one God of all men. Not specifically for one reason, religion or the other. When he comes, he is the monopoly of, not of any sect, he is God of all. Call the by any name if you like. So God is one for man, for all creation, and all the devotees have the desire to meet that very same one. So those who really desire him are, you see, actually his true presence. And the person who tells us about him is truly our brother and our true friend. That is why the Guru Nanak says, Masters unite us in such a relation which can never be broken in the world and the world hereafter. So within each Master's soul, his great devotion for his Guru. So yesterday that subject was there, today we have to consider, well, devotion to the Masters and what they give. This is the subject today. So you find in the histories of the Masters, they were very much devoted to their Guru. Christ gives us an outward example of a tree, fruit-laden tree. He says, the branches, so long as they are embedded in the tree, they bear forth fruit. If they are cut out from the tree, they cannot bear forth fruit. And he says, what? I am the vine. Ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. You follow? The devotee cannot do without the Guru. It means that as long as one is not truly joined to the one Guru, one cannot be his devotee. Furthermore, cannot become a true devotee of the Lord. Mala Room says, God has ordered, but I am so great that all the universes I have created, high and low, they all are not sufficient to contain. But strange enough, I reside, I contain myself in a world-made flesh. You find, try to find me, go there. There you find I'm there. So Guru receives God, for we have not yet seen God. And we must become as subtle and as fine as He is to be able to do so. Each man views life from his own level. Now take the example. In the air there is nothing, appears to be nothing. Is there nothing in the air? But there is something which is not afloat level of the eyes. Either our eyes become so subtle as the air is, or whatever is in the air so become magnified to come up to the level of our eyes that we see. To see through the microscope. That magnifies 700 times greater. When you look through it, you see full of all microbes. Now they are hard, but we do not see. Why we do not see? Unless you rise as above as he is, or as subtle as he is, as fine as he is, we cannot see. The master's job is what? To withdraw ourselves from the physical body. And makes us subtle, rise above, and with that eyes open to see. So, if we see through a microscope, we can see atmosphere full of tiny microbes. The eye has not developed the ability to perceive those subtle expressions of life. That is why Guru Nanak says, and he rise above as he is, only then you can see. Able to jahoe go. This is your question. So if man is not as high as God, then what is his first step? God precedes, Guru precedes God. And for God manifests in the Guru. That is different. He resides in every heart. But where he manifests, his world made flesh. And from man's level, he therefore comes before God. He is God plus man. Or God man, or man is God. If a disciple truly becomes a guru man, he also becomes a God man. That he becomes a guru man. So unless one sees, how can one meditate upon it? Bin dekhe kaise ko jaan? Whom we have not seen, how can we meditate on him? How can a person put all his attention on that which he has not seen? You follow me? Fine. So firstly, devotion to the Guru is very necessary. Now question, what is Guru? Guru is not the body, mind that. Guru is not the body. Guru Nanak was asked, who is your Guru? He said, Shabad is my Guru. My soul is a disciple. Kabir said, who is your Guru? Where does he reside? He says, he resides into the heavens, high above. He is in Yamaha, rise above body consciousness, I am in the body. So, God into expression power is the Guru. World made flesh is the Guru. We reflect the body, we need manifest. In all of us he desires, but they are not manifest. In whom is manifest, the only criterion is he will give you, raise you up so high that your inner eye, your single eye is open, you begin to see light. That's the only criterion, Prabhupada. Goes on like anything, but the true criterion of it, Guru Vada Saint is one who can withdraw your attention from all outside, withdraw from the body below, and open the inner eyes, you testify that there is light. So that is what Master said, don't believe in the words of the Guru. If you do not see for your own self, what is it? So, Guru is not the body, Guru is that power which is manifesting upon the human self. And as such, it never bought. That the Christ power, God power, Guru power, Master power, never dies. All masters have taken up the body and then left it. And we must do also the same thing. So the power which works through the physical form never dies. This is a misunderstanding going around the world. We do respect that human soul in which it manifests. Had he not been there, how could he have risen as subtle as I had been? So his job is first to withdraw our expectation from all outside, raise up the subtle high level, and then open the inner eye. You see for yourself, yes, there is light. So Brahma speaks through the body. Without body, what can Brahma say? Brahma bole kaya kya bole kaya vich Brahma kya bole. But the power through which he is manifesting is also called, we respect him as the Guru. But that person who is his master or Guru, he never says, I'm the Guru. He says, my Guru. That power is the Guru. He is conscious of that power working through him. Because he is manifesting there. So devotion must necessity start with the body. You see. This is the first step. And further, now you see, eyes are the windows of the soul. Eyes are the windows of the soul. And soul, in whatever color it is, dyed. That very thing is radiating through the eye. And further, when you come in contact with some person like that, you look into eyes. When two eyes are made four, that's what they catch each other. Then the radiation comes forth. So further we see eclipse of what is manifesting in his eyes. What is manifesting in his eyes? World? Is all light? Light radiates. This raises us to a higher level, and so the importance of this, of the Guru. Bhakti, our devotion to the Guru has been stressed by all masters. You see? Whose soul is imbued with the intoxication of God. If her soul is imbued with lust, excuse me, then we will have that readiness with pure purity, personified. Only such thing to look up to him. When we set our master's feet, we used to bow down to the feet of the master. He said, what is lying there? Look up what I'm up. So we always look into the eyes of the master. With the radiation comes. So Christ, you see, taught the same thing. He said, I'm divine. Or the branches. As long as the branches are better than the vine, that will bear successful fruit. If not, they cannot bear for fruit. So they said, you cannot do without me. This is what he said. And others also said the same thing. St. Paul echoed this when he said, I live, yet not I. But Christ is within me. Guru Nanak says, to just be one in the grave of the Guru, this is a long grave. But in the long grave, just be one, that oneness will come through us. Hafiz explained, that his heart was so full of the beloved that the thought of his being there was gone. He became one with the beloved. Of course he had a person, to know for should for the I seen as those Ali Khaisid. I was so absorbed in that I forgot who I am. I'm no more. It is I, not I, but Christ lives in me. This is it.
Good morning and welcome to Master Kirpal Singh's satsang, telephone satsang. The talk that you just heard is from the San Jose talk number 3, The Light and Sound at the Mission Church in Santa Clara University, November 18, 1972. Our reader today is Christine Clevenger. Are you there, Christine?
Yes, I'm here, Rudy. Thank you.
Oh. Okay, continue.
All righty. Good morning to all of Master's beloved children. This morning I'm going to read his talk called Chastity and Forgiveness, which was published in the January 1968 issue of Sat Sandesh. The supreme ideal of human life is the realization of God. Religions were made to perpetuate the teachings of great souls who had attained enlightenment. They have left an account of their personal experiences for the guidance of posterity. They have all said that God is omnipresent. Whatever we see around us is undoubtedly His manifestation. But the question is how to see Him. The Lord's Word is all-pervading. There is no place where His Word does not exist. We have seen the glimpse of God. One can experience God only by rising to His level of superconsciousness. Although the atmosphere is full of microbes, nothing is visible to the naked eye. Does that mean that there is nothing in the air? We can see thousands of tiny objects through a microscope. Now, there are two possibilities. Either whatever is present in the air is made to magnify so as to correspond to the visual level of our eyes, or our vision should become so subtle as to see these tiny germs clearly. So it is impossible for us to see the highly subtle and indescribable Lord with our physical eyes. When we are able to develop superconsciousness and subtlety of His level, we can have some experience of Him. The question is one of developing the third eye. And who can open the inner eye? Only the Master's grace can do it. In the Gurbani it says, through the grace of a God-man, you will see the temple of the Lord within. The human body is the temple of God. In order to attain superconsciousness, one has to withdraw from all the physical attachments. So long as we remain identified with external objects, we cannot assume a subtle form. Tulsi Sahib says, the Lord dwells within us, but we remain ignorant. Cursed is such a life. Even after getting human life, if he is not manifested within, it is a great curse, because we can accomplish this task only in human life. O Tulsi, the whole world is suffering from cataract. Doctors do not give vision to cataract patients. They only remove the thin membrane covering the pupil of the eye. Similarly, the Lord is within us. He is our controlling power. The entire universe is his manifestation. He can be realized within, but not before our subtle eye is able to pierce through the darkness within. Tulsi Sahib and Shamus E. Tabriz both have said the same thing. See the Lord with your own eyes and hear his eternal music with your own ears. If we see through the darkness inside, we can experience the divine light. Tulsi Sahib says that you will not be able to penetrate through the darkness without the help of a perfect master. In this lies the greatness of a master soul who can dispel our darkness and give us the inner experience of divine light. This is possible when our attention is withdrawn from outside and we rise above body consciousness. This is not easy. Despite years of meditation, past sages and seers could not always get this experience of divine light. They used to practice kumbhak, or hatha yogic exercise, and after passing through the six ganglionic centers, got a little inner experience in the center of the two eyebrows. This practice takes hundreds of years. Only the all-powerful master can pull the soul up. He alone can free us from the prison of oblivion. Who can rise above body consciousness? One who is unattached and is not engrossed in sensual pleasures can do it. Only such a person can easily tap inside. Ethical and chaste life is therefore very essential. Even if the master, by his own grace, lifts someone whose life is not pure above body consciousness, the latter will not be able to withstand it. It is crystal clear that there are two main obstacles in the way: passionate desires and anger. To lead a chaste life is not enough. We have to overcome all desires. In anger, the soul flows out. Self-indulgence and anger lead to various other vices. Unless these two enemies are disciplined first, others, like greed, attachment, and egotism, cannot be controlled. One who succeeds in conquering all these five enemies is free from suffering. The senses derive their power from the mind, and the mind from the soul. If our attention is concentrated at the seat of the soul, the senses become powerless. Saints show us the way back to God through Suratshab Yoga. Where is the seat of the soul in the body? At the time of death, the soul withdraws behind the two eyebrows after leaving the lower regions. Anyone who is able to withdraw his sensory currents at this point in his lifetime can open his inner eye. But this can be done only through the grace of a perfect living master. First, the master helps us in withdrawing our attention from external worldly objects with which it is identified. In this body, the temple of God, dwell both our controlling power and we. The master has great power to pull the soul above the plane of senses to the seat of the soul. He opens the inner eye. Thus, the spiritual aspirant has a first-hand experience and does not require any other evidence. Until I see the truth with my own eyes, I cannot be fully convinced of what the master says. Unless the senses are controlled, the mind is stilled, and the intellect too is equipoised, the soul cannot realize itself. Gyan yoga will not be of much help. We draw inferences only to acquire knowledge, but the true knowledge has to be experienced. Only an adept who has had a first-hand experience can give you a taste of it. Similarly, only one in whom the divine light is manifest can show you light. Intellectuals and religious preachers cannot do this work. True inner experience can be given only by the grace of a truly competent master. By infusing his own life impulse, he puts us on the spiritual path and then unites us with the power of God. One who has subdued the senses qualifies for the divine grace. Cravings and anger can be controlled by cultivating chastity and forgiveness. If you go into details, you will find that these are our main hurdles. If you were to listen to someone silently, you will find that he talks of his passionate desires, petty jealousies, factions, enmities, recriminations, etc. He will overrate some and underrate others. These vices must be dispensed with. Prophet Muhammad has said, if you can control the two sense organs, namely, one between the two lips and the other between the two thighs, I shall stand surety for you in the Lord's court. We simply read or hear these words, but never go deeper into their meaning. If these two virtues were cultivated, it would be a great blessing. In the absence of these virtues, meditation is hampered. This is the main object of my laying stress on keeping a diary. The first column in the diary is for ahimsa, or nonviolence, and forgiveness. Even if someone harms you, forgive him. Do not injure anybody's feelings. One who practices ahimsa would not tell a lie, cheat others, or have ill-gotten gains. Now let us see what saints have said on this subject. Chastity and forgiveness are the two most basic and noble virtues of all. If we acquire these virtues, we will be successful in our meditation. Christ says, "Suffer, little children, to come unto me, for theirs is the kingdom of God." Children are endowed with these two qualities. They are totally indifferent to sex. They never mind, even if they are naked. If they go astray, we, the parents, are to blame. If they fight with each other, they soon reconcile their differences. Let us become like little children, and we will be successful in our meditation. A competent master, by virtue of the God power working in him, turns away your attention from outer pursuits, pulls it above the plane of senses, and opens the inner eye. He gives to the spiritual aspirant some capital of inner experience, which is his grace, but it is our responsibility to preserve it. Christ was asked as to what should be the code of conduct in life. On inquiring about the injunction of Moses in this regard, he was told, "An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." At this, Christ remarked, "It was because your hearts were hardened that he gave you this injunction." When asked to express his own opinion, Christ said, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." And when further asked how enemies should be dealt with, he replied, "Love thy enemies." Jealousy, malice, calumny, backbiting, falsehood, and fraud can be overcome by love. Unless these vices are given up, there is no way out. Even good preachers and reformers are found wanting in chastity and forgiveness. They indulge in recrimination, falsehood, fraud, hypocrisy. What is wanted is cultivation of forgiveness. If we develop childlike qualities, we can reach our goal. Now let us listen to what Sant Kabir has to say about purity of life. When chastity and forgiveness sprout in one's heart, the invisible Lord becomes visible. Without chastity, one cannot reach him. Empty words are of no avail. Kabir says in very clear words that chastity and forgiveness are the two prerequisites for God realization. Without purity of life, all sermons or learning are of no use. Chastity means purity of thoughts, words, and deeds. Chastity is life, and self-indulgence is death. Forgiveness is difficult to practice. Outwardly, we pose to be humble, but inwardly, we do not hesitate to harm others. I remember an incident in my life. Long ago, my wife was relieved of her purse at a railway station. The police caught the thief, and the purse was recovered from him. I was asked to lodge a report at the police station. I told the police it was unnecessary, as the purse had been found. But on their insistence, I had to go to the police station, perhaps for the first time. I told the officer on duty that I was not interested in reporting the matter, but he would not agree, and the report was ultimately lodged. Later, I had to go to the court as a witness. The police officer talked to me on this issue. He felt that justice must be done, but I contended that there were two aspects of the law, one justice and the other compassion or mercy. I emphasized that even after justice had been done, bitterness would remain, whereas through mercy, he could be forgiven. Compassion leads to mercy, which in turn leads to nonviolence in thoughts, words, and deeds. Anyway, when I appeared in the court, I requested the magistrate that if he could let the accused off on some ground, I would have no objection. The magistrate, after satisfying himself that there was no record of previous conviction against the accused, ordered his discharge with a warning. As a result, the accused and his relatives always remain grateful to me. What a tremendous effect forgiveness has. Justice could never produce this effect. Forgiveness is the greatest of all virtues. And so is purity of thought. But alas, all our time is spent in tensions and petty squabbles. We find it difficult to pardon others. Remember, only a brave man can forgive others, not a weak person. Indirectly, we remain busy in condemning our opponents. Such persons can never realize God. All learning and religious pursuits are of little significance unless the qualities of chastity and forgiveness are thoroughly understood and cultivated in life. Because of these two virtues in children, saints always have great love for them. God does not dwell in the skies, but is within us. Unless proper background is developed, spiritual advancement is not possible. Kabir now explains in greater detail what chastity is. One who is chaste is greatest of all and is a storehouse of all virtues. Chastity is the main source of all virtues. It is rare to come across a really chaste person. Nearness to such a pure soul produces a soothing effect, and even his reflection causes awakening. It is not an exaggeration. By virtue of ethical life, the body of a celibate is charged with the divine grace, tranquility, and fragrance. Chastity is thus a great blessing. It brings all the treasures of the three worlds, physical, astral, and causal. You may ask as to what should married persons do. In olden days in India, people used to observe continence for the first 25 years. Thereafter, having assimilated religious scriptures, they would settle down as householders for another 25 years. Having gotten one or two children, they would leave their homes to enter Vanaprastha ashram for another period of 25 years, during which they would devote themselves to achieve the ultimate goal of life, realization of self and God. After reaching the goal in Vanaprastha ashram, they would become sannyasis, those who renounce the world completely and wander from place to place to preach religion. The real significance of marriage is to have a life partner who can stand by you under all circumstances, in pleasure and pain, in riches and poverty. Both should cooperate in striving to realize God. To go on producing children is not our aim. If a woman has to give birth, she should bear a saint or a philanthropist or a great warrior. Otherwise, it is better if she remains barren and does not waste the divine light. Our forefathers generally used to lead more disciplined lives, but now there is little restraint. I have to say this because of the deplorable condition in which we are. The world population is increasing at an alarming rate of 90 a minute. We can well imagine the population problem after 20 or 30 years, so it is all the more necessary for us to cultivate continence. Christ has said, husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. Swami Ram Taras has also emphasized, unless husbands and wives love each other as brothers and sisters, there is no hope for India. Those who are awakened say so. The solution thus lies in leading a life of self-restraint. Even if a person is able to find a perfect saint who can give the disciple a first-hand spiritual experience, progress on the spiritual path is impossible unless we practice chastity and forgiveness. We should therefore forget the past and start leading a clean life from now on. There is no dearth of scholars, religious, and disciplined people, but we seldom come across a really chaste person. Kabir says that there are countless learned men, those who meditate and achieve concentration, and those who are benevolent and disciplined, but a celibate is rarely to be found. I have come into contact with the heads of almost all religions, but only a few lead a life of celibacy. A celibate can reach his real goal without making much effort, and one who practices both forgiveness and chastity has nothing to worry about and will realize God. Let me give my grandfather's example. He was a clean-hearted man. He would not nurse any grievance against anyone. He became a widower at the age of 25. He never married again, although he lived for more than 100 years. A day before his death, he told some people that he would be leaving the world the next day, and if they wanted to convey any message to their dear ones in heaven, they might let him know. Just before his end, some of his relations asked him to utter the name of God, but he said that God is permeating throughout my body, and I am going straight to him. I am talking of chaste ones. Such people have an innate feeling about the presence of God. Again, in the Gurbani, it says, those who have complete faith in God, they enjoy the quintessence of true knowledge. You may go on meditating all through your life, but unless you practice chastity and forgiveness, it will not bear any fruit. Anger causes excitement. Most of the ills are psychosomatic, being the result of emotional disturbances caused by hatred, animosity, and worry. Saints always lay stress on the basic essentials of life, but alas, we do not pay heed to them. Chastity is the ocean of happiness. None can fathom its depth. Without the word, none can be called a sadhu. Without capital, there cannot be a moneylender. Kabir says that chastity is the ocean of happiness. It is so deep that none can measure its depth, but only the word personified saints can realize it. The word would become manifest where there is a life of continence. A person who practices celibacy and forgiveness can realize God and can truly be called a sadhu. These two virtues are of prime importance, and wherever these exist, other virtues come in of their own accord. Such a person, by constant contact with the inner sound current, or shabd, becomes a storehouse of all virtues. One who has found a master but has not become his mouthpiece, or Guru Mukh, has not yet freed himself from lusts of the flesh. After having found a master, one must develop receptivity towards him. Who is a Guru Mukh? One who has no wish of his own and lives in the will of the master. Such a person is automatically relieved of all sorts of passions. As the master is an embodiment of chastity, chastity radiates from him and penetrates into the disciple the moment he thinks of him. He is full of compassion and forgives all. Only a Guru Mukh can escape from all kinds of indulgences, since he abides in the word of the master. If ye love me, keep my commandments. Hazur Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj used to say, we hesitate to commit an impious act in the presence of a child. How dare we ever do so if we realize that God within us is all-seeing? The Master is an embodiment of the Word and gives us a contact with it. By listening to the eternal music and seeing the divine light, one gets inner peace, and the mind gets docile by communion with Nam. The Upanishads state that by attaining the word, we attain all. So long as man has animal passions, he cannot be a Guru Mukh. When the thought guru resides within, the disciple is free from lust. As you think, so you become. If your mind constantly dwells on a chaste person, you will unconsciously attract and imbibe chastity. Kabir says that one who becomes a thought guru incarnate would automatically rid himself of all desires. In the first place comes his sweet remembrance. The next is his manifestation within. One should therefore exercise great caution in adopting a master. If he is really an adept in the science of soul, you can achieve salvation. Otherwise, if you concentrate on the form of a so-called guru, you may at the most become like him. You might have heard of Dadu Sahib. One day he was going bareheaded. Someone, knocking him on the head, inquired, "Where is Dadu's house?" He replied, "Go this way and you will find him inside the house." To his consternation, he found the same man, Dadu, sitting in the house. The visitor felt ashamed when he realized that he had insulted the saint. Dadu Sahib said it did not matter, since even an earthen pot of insignificant value is purchased after the buyer has made sure of its serviceability by knocking it all over. A master should be chosen after thoughtful consideration, just as water should be taken after filtration. A perfect master is a rarity. The world is full of so-called gurus, while there are only a few really competent masters. Masters alone are described in the Vedas and other scriptures as sages, saints, and great souls, for they are word personified. Anyone can lecture, sermonize, or give a religious talk, but practical inner experience can be given only by an awakened soul. Only an alert and wide-awake person can practice chastity. The thieves of sensual desires cannot rob such a person. It is only an alert and conscious person who can cultivate chastity and attain higher consciousness. By practicing chastity, one gradually rises into cosmic consciousness. And I'll close with a hymn from Kabir. O friend, this body is his lyre. He tightens its strings and draws from it the melody of Brahma. If the strings snap and the keys slacken, then to dust must this instrument of dust return. Kabir says, none but Brahma can evoke its melodies. And that ends today's reading. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Christine, for your wonderful reading. Can you please tell us what you're reading from?
Yes, I read from Master's Talk, Chastity, and Forgiveness.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, today's satsang, we had 74 participants. And thank you, Master, for the wonderful talks and for your grace every day. You can now please everyone hang up their phones.